afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political views, events for December 15th. It's Thursday, Dave, and it's 2022. Howdy do.
Well, for another week it is anyway. Hi.
Yeah, how about that?
How are you?
I'm great, thank you.
You know, we have a couple things to celebrate today. First, yeah, it's National Cupcake Day. So I hope all our listeners enjoy their favorite flavored cupcake. And more importantly for, I won't say for just the women out there, but primarily it's National Wear Your Pearls Day.
Oh.
Yeah. How about that? I'm celebrating Bill of Rights Day.
Okay.
Day of Remembrance established 1941 on this day, celebrating the first 10 amendments to the Constitution passed by Congress in 1789. These rights placed limits on government power, especially the federal government.
What happened to that?
There you go. Well, 81 years ago, FDR called on the people of the U.S. to observe the day by displaying the flag. Excuse me, and meeting together for such prayers and ceremonies as they may seem appropriate. And now you know.
Where'd that go? Well, I'll tell you. But I'll tell you what, Dave, if we celebrated and ate everything that you have on your days of recognition, we'd all be pretty fat, you know. Cupcakes and pizza and donuts and chocolate and chocolate candy and... Wow.
See a national day of exercise.
Uh-huh. Need multiple days of those. But gold exercised today, but not to the upside, but to the downside. But that's okay. Down $30. No biggie. $17.78. Silver was down 84 cents, but 23.18 is not bad. Platinum was down 2.25%. Palladium was down 7%. Now, that was a drop. 1867. And with all that came a stronger dollar, 104.60, up 0.98. Crude oil fell down a buck at 76.17. Paper markets today. Let's see. The Dow closes out its worst day in 3 months. 764 points, 33,202. The S&P was down 2.5%, 3,895. The NASDAQ was down 3.25%, 10,810, and that was 360 points. And I believe Europe had a pretty nasty trading day overnight. They were all down over 3%. The FTSE was down just a little under 1%, but both France and Germany were, France was down 3% and the DAX was down 3.25%. I think Asia had the same kind of a day. The Nikkei was down. Well, none of them were down 3%, that's for sure. Except the Shanghai. Well, I got a schlagging. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought it said down 7%. It was down 7 points, so not so bad, only 0.25%. Bonds today, 10-year yield, that dipped out of the 50s, 3.452%. Oil, natural gas, continues to climb up almost 7% at 6.877. So, yeah, shows that the Dow dropped. fears of a recession. Already in one, ladies and gentlemen. But hey, there's big fears out there, but they'll wake up sooner than eventually they'll say we're in a recession, and then it's just such a little funny joke. But anyway, let's go ahead and we talked about the Fed hike yesterday by 50 basis points. Took it to 4.25 to 4.5. We talked about that yesterday. It's the highest in 14 years. It's the seventh rate hike this year. And it's going to make it more costlier for you guys, for consumers and businesses, for, I don't know, buying homes, autos, and lots of other purchases. And of course, you might earn a little more interest on that money you have in the bank. But so instead of going making $250,000, you might make 75 cents. So, yay. So you're going to make more. So it's still a far cry from what we once got from letting the banks use our money anymore. Now they just – anyway. Let's see. Again, you know, they're going to continue to hike. They've already said that. People are going to take a hit when you buy those big items. It really does dramatically increase your monthly payments and your cost. And again, I heard the example, Dave, that, you know, a year ago, that if you were looking to buy a home with the rates being as low as they were, you'd be looking for an $800,000 home. And today, with the higher rates, you can only afford a $400,000 home. So basically cut in half. That's what the interest rates do. And it really is true. I heard someone talking about people when they buy homes, and it really is true. Your home is not an appreciating asset. It depreciates. You know, you should really buy homes to live in. You shouldn't buy homes as investments, not the ones that you're living in, because, you know, you pay for keeping it update, paint, and everything else. So, you know, but, and people don't buy homes that they should buy for themselves. They buy for the biggest house that they can get. That's the underlying, I think, motive when people buy homes, is how much I want a big house. No matter what the cost, I want a big house. I don't care. And, so that's probably not the best thing, and that's why builders seem to keep building bigger and bigger homes, and that's why we continue to have these problems in the real estate market, Dave. But we also saw total credit card balances have topped $900 billion. So that's quite a bit.
Indeed it is, and polling is suggesting that we Americans are spending down the savings we accumulated during the pandemic years, especially during the lockdowns, that and are using, again, credit more and more instead. I mean, eventually rising rates are going to make it harder for those households to pay down, much less pay off their debts. Those who don't qualify for low-rate credit cards because of weaker credit scores are already paying significantly higher interest on their balances, and they'll continue to, particularly as Congress continues to cater to the big banks. Average interest rates now well over, I believe I saw 17%, with some, you know, in the mid to high 20s. It's outrageous. It shouldn't be allowed. But it is, and we know that going into our debt spree. So, you know, we sometimes reap what we sow. But for people who have home equity lines of credit and other variable rate debt, rates are going to continue to increase by roughly the same amount as the Fed hike, usually within a billing cycle or two. That's because those rates are based, at least in part, on the bank's prime rate, which follows the Fed funds rate plus a couple of percentage points. The rising returns on high-yield savings accounts and CDs have put them at levels not seen since 2009, which means that households may want to boost their savings if and when possible. Last week, mortgage buyer Freddie Mac reported the average rate on the 30-year mortgage rate dipped to 6.33. I think that's down a little bit further, a couple of points, basis points, that is. We'll talk about that a little later. That means the rate on a typical home loan is still more than twice as much as it was just 1 year ago. Sales of existing homes declining 9 straight months as borrowing costs have become too high a hurdle, and the prices themselves for Americans are already paying much too much for food, gas, and other necessities. Used vehicle loans are up over 2 percentage points to 10.2%, ladies and gentlemen. New cars, you know, I just saw it. It's almost bragging. I beg your pardon. A new, I think it was a BMW SUV. You know, a real upbeat commercial, the one where, you know, the dad thinks his son and daughter-in-law have bought their new vehicle for him and his wife. Well, that's only going for a modest $895 a month. So go ahead, pop in. I mean, thankfully, the average price of a new vehicle is $47,000, not up at the BMW level. But that costs almost $8,500 in interest to pay that off. And that's going to just chase people away from the auto market.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. This inflation thing is wreaking havoc, and it is not done by any stretch.
Okay, let's see. Well, you know, not only did we raise the rates, but the ECB did 50 basis point, and the ECB, Bank of England, and Swiss National Bank dialed back their increases to a half a percentage point for 3/4 in a blitz of these central banks' actions today. But they all made it pretty clear that, you know, they're going to continue because it's their job to fight inflation. That's their job. And they're going to do it wholeheartedly. And so even though they drop back to a half a point, it doesn't mean that they're going to, you know, shift their rate hiking campaign. That came out by Christine Lagarde. She says, we have made progress over the course of the last few months, but we have more ground to cover. We have longer to go, and we are in for the long game. We're not going to pivot, and we're not wavering, she said. So, I mean, it's like increases that were big were rare before the current inflation. We have some technical issues here coming on, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that was. It was very loud.
I heard that.
Yeah, you heard that too?
Well, I just heard a change in your voice. I think our communication software, Skype, is playing games with the bad weather in the Mid-Atlantic today.
Yeah, you've had some, what did you have, ice and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, they were calling for up to 3 inches of snow before it turned over to freezing rain and then rain. But all it was here was a slick coat of ice this morning. It's down in the low 40s, so, you know, it's just a cold rain.
Dangerous stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you don't see it. Thankfully, I saw, you know, sort of icicles coming off my porch, so I knew to... take it slow and easy. Took my dog out for her morning jaunt. But yeah, you're right. I mean, all these central bank heads are saying, you know, more to come, long way to go before we pivot. Blah, 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 blah. Blah.
Some radio program we are. Well, you know, they said blah, 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 blah.
Party.
But that's pretty much it.
Bah, humbug. But, hey, it is what it is.
It is what it is. Well, along with those lines, you know, the mortgage rates have come down a little bit. Freddie Mac reported this morning that the average on the 30-year rate inched down to 6.31%, all the way from 6.33%. Woo-hoo, it's dropping like a rock. But, again, as we were talking about, even a year ago it was 3%, a little over 3%. So, but remember it, I mean, to where we were at, 7.08, that was as recently as in early November. And these rates are still more than double than what they were a year ago. So, you know, it's it is putting pressure on the housing market, Dave?
Well, it looks like Powell and company are talking about a couple of more increases early next year, beginning in February 1st, that their so-called dot plot interest rates will end up being in the range of 5 to 5.25% by the end of next year. That suggests probably another 0.75 percentage point increase. I wouldn't hold that to be reliable. I mean, who knows what happens between now and even February 1st, whether they're going to continue with another 0.5% increase or go down to 0.25, go back up to 0.75. Who the heck knows? There's so much more uncertainty now than there normally is, and there's normally a good bit of amount of that. It's like the wild, wild west out there, Melody.
Yes, it really is. And but, you know, Americans, they cut back on their retail spending last month. But again, there's been so many specials and Black Fridays beginning this summer. You know, a lot of people got in their Christmas shopping early because everybody knew prices were going to go higher. And they were concerned that, you know, if they waited till December, that prices would be significantly higher. But still, you know, they're still making decisions on what they're going to buy. So 0.6% says that's what the retail sales fell from October to November. And again, we saw that sharp rise just the month before. Furniture fell. Electronics, home and garden stores, you saw those sales fall. Let's see if there's anything else to see. Anything else you'd like to comment on that, Dave?
Well, you know, here's another volatile area that's literally up and down month after month. It's hard to gauge a short-term trend in this category. You got economist Andrew Hunter at Capital Economics says that he expects a sharp drop in consumer spending overall early next year. I mean, we see sales down over 2% with auto dealers, 0.6% at sporting goods stores, just 0.1% at general merchandise stores like Walmart and Target. But sales at online and catalog stores fell just shy of 1%.
Hey, I hear the music. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Oh, mercy, mercy, me.
All things and what they used to be. Oh, mercy, mercy, me. Melody taking care of client business at the moment. She'll be back with us momentarily. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm her co-host, Dave Allen. Happy to be with you. We're at 1-800-375-4188. Now, as Melody would tell you, this is my favorite Thursday topic, as a rule, jobless claims. Weekly jobless claims fell to their lowest level since late September, according to the Labor Department's latest report out this morning. Some say the numbers suggest that the labor market continues to be resilient. Others say it's just tight. Yet others think it's just a function of employers holding on to who they have to avoid a repeat of what happened after the pandemic lockdowns ended when this ensuing recession ramps up. Now, the number of Americans who applied for initial unemployment benefits in early December fell to just about a three-month low of 211,000, indicating layoffs around the holiday season do remain relatively low, even as the economy softens. New unemployment filings declined by 20,000 last week from 231,000 the week before, according to the government. Economists had forecast new claims at 232,000 in the 7 days ending December 10th. The number of people applying for jobless benefits is one of the best barometers of whether the economy's getting better or worse. New unemployment filings have gradually risen from a 54-year low of 166,000 last spring. But they're still in the relatively extremely low category. Economists predict layoffs will increase more sharply, however, as rising interest rates orchestrated by the Fed choke off more U.S. growth. Number of people already continuing to collect unemployment benefits, meanwhile, edged up a mere 1,000 to 1.67 million. That, however, is the highest reading since February. Now, 41 of the 53 states and territories that report jobless claims showed a decline last week. New York, Georgia, Texas, and California posted the biggest drops, and no states reported a large increase. But remember the caveat on jobless claims these days. The government's seasonally adjusted data, has been more erratic than usual since the start of the pandemic. Pardon me, for reporting reasons and other. I mean, they're prone to large swings during the holiday season, but in particular, that runs generally from Thanksgiving through mid-January. The new jobless claims before seasonal adjustments, for example, registered about 249,000 last week compared with less than 200,000 at the end of November. Jobless claims are one of the first indicators to deteriorate when the economy is headed toward a recession. Businesses start out cutting jobs as the economy slows and demand for their goods and service begins to slacken. So far, the modest rise in jobless claims since the summer points to a somewhat weaker economy, but not necessarily a shrinking one overall, according to economists. Obviously, that's not the case in housing, which has been in a recession for a couple of months at least. The labor market is the strongest in decades by virtually every measure, and many companies are still hiring. looking ahead, economist Nancy Vanden Houten at Oxford Economics says initial claims data can be noisy around the holidays, but the low level of initial claims is a reminder that employees are reluctant to let go of workers they struggled to find. 4-week moving average totaled a little over 227,000, falling by 3,000 from the previous week. Now, on balance, overall, the report shows labor market is still too tight, particularly for the Federal Reserve. Latest numbers almost certainly are going to keep the Fed on track to continue raising rates early next year, at least, after delivering their latest 50 basis point increase yesterday. Economists at Jefferies say the labor market will soften eventually, but it's expected to take a little longer for the cracks to form. Pardon me. Now, with dozens of African leaders in Washington this week, the Biden administration's offering a not-so-subtle pitch in its economic competition with China on the continent. The U.S. says it offers a better option than China to its African partners. Now, ahead of Tuesday's start of the three-day U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, as it's called, Deputy Commerce Secretary Don Graves acknowledged that the U.S. has indeed fallen behind China in Africa. China has notably surged past American foreign direct investment there, but Graves argues that the U.S. remains the partner of choice. He said, we took our eye off the ball, so to speak, and U.S. investors and companies are having to play catch-up. Just another area that that's happening. Once again, the Fed leading by example. Heads of state from 49 African nations, plus the African Union, were invited to take part in the summit that had been billed as an opportunity for the White House to re-engage the continent's leaders, the continent whose leaders often feel they've been given short shrift by the U.S. and other leading nations, remain crucial to global powers because of its rapidly growing population, not to mention their significant natural resources and a sizable voting bloc in the United Nations. Africa remains of great strategic importance as the U.S. tries to recalibrate its foreign policy with greater focus on China. What the Biden administration sees as the U.S.'s most significant economic and military adversary. Even before the summit officially began the other day, the White House announced Biden's support for the African Union becoming a permanent member of the Group of 20 Nations. It also appointed Johnny Carson, yes, Johnny Carson, a well-regarded veteran diplomat, to serve as point person for implementing initiatives that come out of the summit. The White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said that the administration would commit to spending $55 billion in African nations over the next 3 years on a wide range of sectors to tackle the core challenges of our time. At the same time, the administration is trying to minimize concerns about China's deepening presence there as a driving force at this week's talk. Yet Beijing's shadow over the biggest international gathering in D.C. this week, since the start of the pandemic, in fact, looms large. Without direct mention of China, Deputy Treasury Secretary Wally Adeyemo on Monday sounded the alarm about petering private investment in middle and low income countries. Excuse me, particularly in Africa. What else I can say about that. We'll leave it at that, ladies and gentlemen. Still in other international news, the UN watchdogs, their nuclear watchdog, is sending a delegation to the Iranian capital of Tehran on Sunday to clarify outstanding safeguard issues that are linked to nuclear particles discovered at Iranian nuclear sites. Gosh, I'm having trouble speaking today. Mohammad Islami, who heads the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, expressed hope that the visit would remove those obstacles and other ambiguities. The visit from the UN's IAEA comes as Iran is enriching uranium at the highest levels in history, one technical step away from weapons grade, according to the watchdog agency. In June, the IAEA called on Tehran to act as on an urgent basis to fulfill its legal obligations in the international community. The IAEA probe is separate from the protracted talks between Iran and the U.S. and other Western powers to reach a new nuclear deal, hoping to pave the path for the lifting of U.S. economic sanctions against that country. But Iranian negotiators have sought to have the investigation terminated in order to move forward on talks, which have been stalled now for several months. Washington withdrew from the Iranian nuclear deal in 2018 under the former President Trump. Subsequently, it imposed sweeping sanctions on Iran that have really hobbled its economy. But since then, Iran's stockpile of fissionable material has expanded rapidly, particularly in the last year and a half to 2 years. Iran announced just last month that it's enriching uranium at 60% purity at its underground Fordo nuclear plant. That's one technical step away from weapons-grade enrichment, which is 90% purity. Now, I'm told that 30% difference to get to 90% is a pretty difficult task technically, yet you know they've been working on it. Under the 2015 nuclear deal, Iran's uranium enrichment was limited to just 3.7%, just enough for a civilian nuclear energy program. You know, this comes at the same time that these mass protests across Iran is coming, set off by the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini while in police custody. She was a young Kurdish Iranian woman who was arrested for allegedly violating the country's strict headscarf laws. Now we know of at least three public hangings of some of those protesters. And the unrest is swelling into a broader movement calling for the downfall of the Islamic Republic in toto. Again, that's being met with violent crackdowns and executions by the government. Back to the American economy. As rising prices continue to weigh on households here, more and more families are feeling stretched too thin. We've talked a lot about this over the the past few years. Now, according to the latest Lending Club report, as of the end of November, 63% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. That's up from 60% in October, near the 64% all-time high in March. Even high-income earners are under pressure, financial pressure. Of those earning more than six figures, 47%, nearly half, reported living paycheck to paycheck. That's up almost 10% from 43% in October. Lending Club's financial health officer, Anuj Nair, says Americans are cash-strapped and their everyday spending continues to outpace their income, which is impacting their ability to save and plan. Although consumer prices rose less than expected in November, persistent inflation has caused real wages to decline. In fact, real average hourly earnings, that is, earnings adjusted for inflation, are down just shy of 2% from a year ago, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that, of course, is leaving many Americans in a bind, particularly as high inflation, high prices force more people to dip into whatever cash reserves they've accumulated or more so to lean on credit just when interest rates are rising at their fastest pace in decades. As we alluded to last segment, already credit card balances are surging, up 15% in the most recent quarter. That's the largest annualized jump in more than 20 years. And I said over 17%. The average credit card rate is now more than 19%. It's an all-time high and still rising. Of course, compared to a year ago, 32% of all consumers are saving less than they were before. Nair warned, with average savings stagnating, if not decreasing, setting financial goals for the new year will become increasingly difficult for many consumers. Now, this is certainly no surprise. Americans' out-of-pocket health spending rose 10.4% in the last year. That was in 2021. That's a growth rate seen not since 1985, driven in part by demand for dental services, eyeglasses, and medical supplies. That's according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in their annual National Health Expenditures Report. Overall, they say health spending grew by just 2.7%, a much smaller rate than the 10.3% bump seen the year before, but the decline of the special pandemic and public health-related federal funding is a huge factor in the 2021 results and does mask a sharper spike in some other areas. When these spending buckets are excluded, total expenditures rose in 2021 by 7.6%, generally a reflection of pent-up demand for medical services after COVID vaccines became available and some people became more confident going back to their doctors. Now, out-of-pocket spending on copays and deductibles is when most Americans become most acutely aware of healthcare costs and what often makes that care unaffordable. That's especially true for people whose insurance payments have been subsidized either by the employer or the government. Out-of-pocket spending rose particularly starkly for, again, dental services and medical equipment, including eyeglasses and contact lenses, as well as physician and clinical services. Employers' health spending rose significantly as well. Private businesses' outlays grew by 6.5% after a 3% decline in 2020. Hey, I hear that music. It's time for another break, that means. I hope you'll stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TimUpRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's problem-solving skills took a little bit longer than she thought last segment. She apologizes, but rest assured she'll be back tomorrow with Butch. She's taking care of other client businesses. Final segment, you know where you can reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Now, as regular listeners of Financial Survival know, Melody, Butch, and I are not big fans of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin for a variety of reasons. Now, I personally used to think that the concept of blockchains, it's the technology that cryptos are built on, could have some genuine applicability to other mainstream uses, but I'm no longer sure about that either. The industry is just too obscure and dubious at this point. That may change in the future, but in any event, several market observers are saying that the cascade of legal charges is on Sam Bankman-Fried and his collapsed FTX crypto empire this week will do little to break up the regulatory fog surrounding crypto. First glance, his arrest, criminal indictment, civil charges brought by the SEC and the CFTC against Bankman-Fried seem like a symbolic end to the initial Wild West era of crypto. His attorney says Mr. Bankman-Fried is reviewing the charges with his legal team and considering all of his legal options. I don't know if that includes changing his mind and fighting extradition. Former regulators, legal scholars, and defense attorneys say that even if Bankman is convicted of criminal charges and loses the civil cases, it'll do little to immediately change standards in the crypto industry, where many companies don't comply with the financial regulations that, say, banks are held to. Now, Timothy Massad, who formerly chaired the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and is now a fellow at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government, says of the prevailing industry status quo, quote, crypto broker dealers and exchanges do not observe requirements to segregate customer assets, to prohibit conflicts of interest, to have active procedures to prevent fraud and manipulation, unquote. Mm-hmm. Crypto players have long argued that such rules don't apply to digital assets. And technically, they may be correct. For years, efforts to regulate cryptos have been mired in politics, particularly in Washington, and debates over whether digital assets can be regulated under existing law or whether new laws tailored to that specific technology are needed. In theory, litigation can provide some answers, but in practice, the criminal case against Bankman will do little to clarify the rules. Why? Well, because criminal charges center on fairly straightforward allegations of fraud rather than technical questions about the nature of cryptocurrencies. Ira Sorkin, who's the well-known white-collar criminal defense attorney who represented convicted Ponzi schemer, the late Bernie Madoff, says, it's alleged that he used money obtained from investors and made material misrepresentations to them as to how that money was going to be used or invested. And that's it. But some say the SEC civil charges against Bankman-Fried might shed some light, at least, on whether digital assets qualify as securities and are therefore subject to SEC regulation, as opposed to commodities subject to CFTC oversight. After all, if you can be successfully sued by the SEC for defrauding customers and investors under existing security laws, that suggests, doesn't it, that those laws actually apply to you, right? The problem is it could take some time, years even, to get that answer. And it's uncertain that the resolution of cases surrounding FTX will be broadly applicable to the world of crypto and other crypto companies. So what comes next here? Well, at the very least, the FTX debacle has stimulated a fresh round of debate and, oh yes, congressional hearings on the future of regulation. And the experts are insisting that there's a need for Congress to write new laws to clarify the agency's role in that market. There are also a lot of people out there who will continue to lose money, money they shouldn't have invested in cryptos in the first place, if the industry is allowed to continue with current practices. Now, staying in the world of regulation, yesterday, the chair of the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, Gary Gensler, proposed changes in how stocks should trade. Represents the most far-reaching shakeup of Wall Street's foundations in decades. Intended to boost competition and benefit small traders, the ideas here embodied in the rules have been unpopular with many in the trading establishment. But Gensler's 3-2 majority of commissioners on the SEC will likely adopt the proposals and put them out for what's sure to be controversial public comment. More on that in a second. Now, the new rules don't include a ban on order flow payments, which subsidize the industry's commission-free trading, but some of the proposed changes could threaten the key role now played by half a dozen market makers, including Citadel Securities and Virtue Financial, in the completing the trades of individual investors. Retail stockbrokers like Charles Schwab, who's looking to buy TD Ameritrade, and the E-Trade unit of Morgan Stanley send most small orders for execution by those computerized wholesale market makers. One of today's five proposals calls for the creation of a new auction process where dealers would compete to execute individual orders. That rule would require stockbrokers and the wholesale market makers to submit to auction orders sent by an individual seeking to buy or sell stock at whatever is the currently quoted price, the so-called marketable order, as long as the trade totals less than 200,000 and the individual averaged fewer than 40 orders a day in the previous 6 months. And that may be good for, you know, most retail investors like you and I, but certainly excludes the big pension funds and other big-time investors. Now, only if the auction finds no match would the wholesaler complete the trade internally, as it does with most retail trades today. In his remarks, I believe, to the Senate Banking Committee, Gensler said the competitive auctions would save retail traders as much as $1.5 billion a year by simply getting them better pricing on their trades. He noted there isn't a level playing field among different parts of the markets. Wholesalers operate in the dark market. Industry forums have criticized the feasibility of order-by-order auctions, warning that small traders would get worse results than those provided by today's market structure. Another proposed rule would allow the stock exchanges to execute trades at price increments smaller than the 1 cent moves that they're limited to under current rules. The off-exchange market makers have no such constraints, and one reason they have gained over 40% of order volumes is their freedom to execute trades at prices that are fractions of a penny better than the exchange prices. So you multiply that, you know, given the volume, and that's a lot of money. With the current penny increment for all stocks, the U.S. markets have lagged behind places like Europe, where prices price moves can adjust dynamically with the stock's price to allow narrower spreads between bid and ask quotes when liquidity allows. The new SEC rule would allow price moves to vary from 1/10 of a cent the 2 cents, the 0.5 cent, and a penny as the quote spread on a stock narrows or widens. Gensler claims that harmonizing the so-called tick sizes would help level the playing field between and among the dark and lit markets. Now, the same proposed rule would change America's 100-year-old conventions for bundling stock trades in round lots of 100 shares. Individuals today trade many stocks in odd lots of fewer than 100 shares, but those orders and trades haven't been reflected in nationally quoted prices. Well, the new rule would do away with those old distinctions. Now, one much-debated idea that's not part of Gensler's proposal is an outright ban on payments made by market makers to induce brokers to send retail order flow their way. Instead, brokers will have to disclose how they measure and obtain the best prices and speedy trades for their customers to justify their receipt of any order flow payments. The SEC will also seek to update Wall Street's reporting on how well retail customers' trades are executed. Market makers are required to report on the pricing they provide on customer trades, but stockbrokers aren't. There's widespread support for the SEC to standardize execution quality reporting by all brokers. Now, whatever rules the SEC adopts will be put out for public comment. The agency will allow 60 days after its proposals appear in the Federal Register. The SEC will then spend about 6 months digesting the feedback they get before issuing amendments and the final rules sometime next year. Of course, that's when any changes to today's trading process will likely face one or more court challenges by the industry. So all bets are off for now. Now, let's end today's program with a discussion about Putin's ongoing war. Russia's foreign ministry warned earlier today that if the U.S. sends sophisticated Patriot air defense missiles to Ukraine, it would be another provocative move that could prompt a response from Moscow. Ministry spokesperson Maria Zakharova said in a weekly briefing that the U.S. had, quote, effectively become a party, unquote, to the war in Ukraine, following reports that it will provide Ukraine with Patriot surface-to-air missiles. But she didn't specify, of course, what any response from Moscow might entail. The Patriot missile, you might recall from the Gulf Wars, early 90s, it's the most advanced the West has yet offered to help push back Russian aerial attacks. An official announcement is expected soon. Now, operating and maintaining a Patriot battery requires as many as 90 troops. And for months, the U.S. has been reluctant to provide the complex system for that reason. Because sending American forces into Ukraine to train and even operate the system's a non-starter for Joe Biden. Even without the presence of U.S. service members to train Ukrainians on use of the system, concerns remain that deployment of the missiles could provoke Russia further or risk that a fired projectile could hit inside Russia and further escalate the conflict. Of course, all is fair in love and war, isn't it, Vladimir? Well, before reports emerged on the delivery of Patriot systems, Dmitry Medvedev, the deputy head of Russia's Security Council, which is chaired by Putin, warned that if the Patriots enter Ukraine along with NATO personnel, they will immediately become a legitimate target for our armed forces. Guess whether the Kremlin backs that threat? Chief Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov answered yes. So White House and Pentagon leaders have said consistently that providing Ukraine with additional air defense systems is a priority, and Patriot missiles have been under consideration for some time. As the winter has closed in and Russia's continued bombardment of civilian infrastructure in Ukraine has escalated, officials say the idea has become a higher priority. Ukraine's electricity provider said today that the country's energy systems had a significant deficit of electricity, and that emergency shutdowns had been applied in some areas as temperatures, yes, hover around or below freezing. The southern Ukrainian system of Kherson was left completely without power, in fact, following Russian shelling there today. Amid the infrastructure attacks and power outages across the country, 7 civilians were killed, 19 wounded yesterday and today, according to Vladimir Zelensky's office, the president. The Moscow-installed mayor of Donetsk said that that city had been hit by the most massive strike since the area came under control of Russian-backed separatists in 2014. The mayor there said 40 Ukrainian rockets struck Donetsk this morning, noting that multi-story residential buildings were hit and that fires broke out at a hospital and university campus. Boy, the plot there thickens further and further, and the Ukrainians' people's struggles continue. A luta continua. The struggle continues. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning in to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye. That's too bad.